Behold the Mermaid. Today's episode is all about one of the most iconic pieces of mermaid cinema ever made. Get it? It's the film that made Tom Hanks a star and the film that bore over a million Madisons. But what other mermaid trend did this movie start, and what connections does it have to a certain theme park? Let's find out. This is the Mermaid Movie Club. I'm Mermaid Zandria. Let's dive into Splash. Greetings and shellutations! Welcome back to the Mermaid Movie Club, a celebration of Merfolk and media. We are officially back in session. Thank you guys so much for waiting for me to get the ball rolling on this again. I appreciate your patience. It means so much. What a way to kick things off again because, oh, guys, you have no idea. This is a very, very special episode because we are tackling a huge mermaid film. No, it's not a Little Mermaid. Not yet. I know. Be patient. I'm getting there. But it is a film that, if it didn't exist, The Mermaid, The Little Mermaid, as we know it, would be very different. And I'll get into why later on. But it is beloved by mermaid fans of all ages. Mostly older ones, to be fair. Like, it's the first movie my mom and dad saw together while they were dating, so it's before my time. But we live in a remarkable age where we can actually, like, go back and watch films from before we were born. Isn't that revolutionary? I mean, that's crazy. Think about that. Sit on that. Welcome to the future. Now, if you're new to this show, first of all, welcome. I'm happy to have you. This is a podcast where we dive into mermaid films from the past and present, analyze them, look at the symbolism, explore the history, mythology, and sociology of mermaids in media, and maybe laugh at some questionable special effects and writing along the way, you know, but still, you know, being nice about it, not being such a jerk about it. What I also like to do is link these movies together, kind of, and share the traits a lot of them have in common, because I've found they like to borrow from each other, even if they're unaware of it. I don't necessarily consider this a bad thing in and of itself, of course, as the interpretation of such traits differs from film to film, and some are definitely better than others. I also open the seafloor for discussion on social media, so if you want to get in touch and share all your thoughts, all my socials are in the show notes, and you can also talk to me on the Anchor voice message box. But I can't believe I still have to say this. Don't be a jerk. That should go without saying. I still have to say it. Don't be a jerk on the internet, don't be a jerk in real life, just don't be a jerk. Ugh. Welcome to 2020, you guys. Anyway, let me take off. Hang on. Anyway, I had to take off my headphones for a second because I just can't hear myself. Anyway, I said we'd be talking about an iconic film today, and that film would be, of course, Splash. You can't really talk about mermaid films without talking about Splash. Splash is literally the blueprint. Of course, there were mermaid films before Splash, such as Miranda, Mad About Men, Night Tide, Mr. Peabody and the Mermaid, all those Annette Kellerman films, plenty before Splash. But in recent years, so many films have taken inspiration from Splash that its influence is undeniable, even 36 years on. If you're listening to this in 2020, then it's 36 years on. If you're listening to this after 2020, then this is hilariously dated. Especially in live-action films, it's hard to really watch these and deny the impact Splash had. A lot of these things I'll point out as we go along, but first, why don't we get into the specs? Splash was released March 9th, 1984 via Touchstone Pictures, the adult-leaning imprint of Walt Disney Pictures. This was actually the first film to be released under Touchstone, and, well, considering it grossed nearly $70 million at the box office on an $11 million budget, I'd say it was a pretty dang good start for Touchstone. The film was directed by Ron Howard, the legendary director who would go on to helm The Da Vinci Code, In the Heart of the Sea, and the Academy Award-winning A Beautiful Mind. It stars Daryl Hannah as the mermaid Madison, and Tom Hanks as Alan Bauer in his first main role in a film. He beat out the likes of John Travolta, Chevy Chase, and Bill Murray for the role, while Hannah was selected after the role was turned down by numerous actresses, including Michelle Pfeiffer, Tatum O'Neill, and Julia Louis-Dreyfus. It is now... Is it raining? I thought it was going to rain. Sorry. The film also stars Eugene Levy as Dr. Walter Kornbluth and John Candy as Alan's brother Freddie Bauer. So you got some comedy heavyweights there and two relative newcomers. I think this is me showing my age here, but it's crazy to me to think of a time where Tom Hanks was a relative newcomer. Keep in mind, a lot of those huge Tom Hanks movies came out when I was a kid. You know, Sleepless in Seattle, Forrest Gump, Apollo 13, Toy Story, come on! That Thing You Do, Saving Private Ryan, it was like the Tom Hanks Renaissance. But did the Tom Hanks Renaissance ever end? I do not think so. I think it is still going. I think we are still in the thick of the Tom Hanks Renaissance. Where was I? Oh. Splash went on to net one Academy Award nomination in 1985 in what I guess we essentially call Best Original Screenplay now. Because on Oscars.org for 1985, it says, writing screenplay written directly for the screen. Mouthful. Lowell Gans, Babalu Mandel, and Bruce J. were nominated for its screenplay. Friedman also for the screen story, and Brian Grazer for the story. Of course, it lost to Robert Benton for Places in the Heart, but awards are overrated anyway. No disrespect to Robert Benton or Places in the Heart. Good on you. Happy for you. I thought I would add real quick, there was a made-for-TV sequel made to Splash, released in 1988. It was called Splash 2, 2 as in, like, also, but also because it sounds like the number 2, which is totally, like, unheard of. And that was directed by Greg Antonacci instead of Ron Howard, and it featured Todd Waring as Alan and Amy Yazbek as Madison. That was filmed at what was then Disney MGM Studios and was the first film to be shot at this studio, released 1 year before it actually opened as a theme park in 1989. I actually cannot find this film on the internet, so if you have some kind of way I can watch this, please, please, please drop me a line. Again, all socials are in the show notes. Please, I need to know. I want to cover this, and supposedly this film's not very good. I see just really bad reviews on this, and I want to see for myself, like, what is it that people don't like about it? I need to know. It debuted on ABC's Disney Sunday Movie in two parts on May 1st and May 8th, 1988. Again, not great reception to it, but I've not seen it, so I can't make that call for myself. For all I know, I'd like it. I don't know. I'm willing to give anything a chance within reason. Now, before we really get into it, I highly recommend watching Josh Gad's Reunited Apart series on YouTube, because he recently brought together Tom Hanks, Daryl Hannah, and Eugene Levy, in addition to Ron Howard, producer Brian Grazer, and screenwriters Lowell Gans and Babalu Mandel. It's lovely. There's a lot of cool stories that they all share. There's something that Daryl Hannah brings up about how she still has a scar from wearing Madison's tail. All these years later, she's still got that scar. And they also have this lovely tribute to the late, great John Candy in this. I highly recommend this. It's so much fun. I'm going to link it in the notes. It's just a really, really good watch. So, anyway, without further ado, let's dive in. This is Splash. We begin in Cape Cod, 20 years ago. That would put this maybe in the early 1960s. It kind of looks like a tour boat, and little Freddie Bauer is playfully looking up the little skirts of women on the boat. Yeah, Disney let that one slip. By the way, just for the record, I am watching the Disney Plus version of this, so it could get interesting. Poor baby Alan falls off the boat, meets a baby mermaid who saves him, and I swear they do like that. If you watch the 13th year, which was Mermaid Movie Club number 2, if you watch that, like, Cody and Mermama do like a little hand signal thing, and without... It's the same thing as that, but without the white light. That's like my new, like, social distancing greeting, just doing like the little mermaid hand wave. let's normalize that, but maybe not doing it so hand so close. That's actually probably a bad idea in retrospect. Forget I said that. I didn't say that. So anyway, mermaid saves him. Hands. Someone jumps in after Alan and gets him out of the water, and he's left to wonder who it was who saved his life under the sea. Meanwhile, our baby mermaid is left alone. Here's the thing with this movie, bit of a spoiler. We don't see any other merfolk in this movie apart from Madison. So you begin to wonder if she is all alone at sea. So having Alan taken away from her must really, really suck. Being a mermaid is a lonely, lonely gig, folks. So she dives off and she disappears into the blue. Fast forward to New York City this morning in 1984. Alan is now running a bustling produce business in the city. That kid that was looking up ladies' skirts on that tour boat? Like I said, Alan's brother, Freddie. Alan seems like the professional, but Freddie swoops in with his fancy car, red velvet blazer, and enough Penthouse magazines to fill a few newsstands with. Interestingly, that also made it past Disney censors, as well as some profanity from Freddie. You know what else slips past Disney censors? The boob mug on Freddie's desk. This was insanely distracting during this watch. I've seen this movie a couple times, and now that I'm watching the Disney Plus cut, I was already made aware of how they censored Madison's butt. That's going to come up later. But the boob mug, like, it, on one hand, it's so blatant. But on the other, it's like, if you're not, like, really paying attention to it, then you don't catch it. Either that or, like, how am I trying to put this? How should I put this? Like, if you've seen the movie a couple times and you know what's going to happen, then you can kind of look around the room and look for other details, and that's when you spot boob mug. So I'm guessing real boobs don't count. We don't need to censor real boobs. But ceramic boobs, they don't, yeah, ceramic boobs don't get censored. Real boobs, that's a thing. So, I'm sorry. This whole thing was just kind of like, whoa, to me. This whole thing flew by me. This whole scene flew by because I was so distracted by boob mug. There was something about cherries. And Freddie eavesdropping on Ellen's phone conversations, but that's sibling stuff, I guess. And because that scene kind of flew by me, I don't actually know where it is that Alan and Freddie end up at next. It looks like some kind of wedding. Now, old habits die hard. Freddie is still looking up women's skirts. There's this woman, Victoria, who I guess was Alan's girlfriend at the time. And she's not in the picture. She's just not at this wedding. Someone asks about her and Alan. He says, flu. She has a bad flu. But hang on. I have to point this out. This is genius. Because it sounds like he says she flew, as in the past tense of fly, like she flew the coop. Like, she's not there. That the impression I got from the first scene, rewatching it, was that he and Victoria basically broke up. And we're going to get into that a little bit later, I think. Basically what I'm saying is the writing in this movie is just absolutely top notch. So they have that little, like, not double entendre. Did I say that right? But it's like a homophone. Yeah, there you go. I think that's the word I'm looking for, is homophone. So later on, they end up at a bar, and Alan is super, 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 super drunk to the point of, are you okay? Dude, are you okay? Is this man okay? He's getting far too personal with total strangers to the point where he tells Freddy he's just going to up and go to Cape Cod. He's just going to go to Cape Cod. As you do. He hails a cab and gets the shell out of Dodge with the worst cab driver of all time. Is he? I've never been in a cab. So, Cape Cod. Here's where we meet Dr. Walter Kornbluth for the first time. Alan's kind of curious as to what he's doing with a ton of boxes on the beach, and Walter gets real up in arms about this, and he deflects. The man deflects to the fact that Alan Bauer is out here on the beach in Cape Cod wearing a tuxedo. I can't really do a Eugene Levy impression to save my life. When I did the Behold the Mermaid thing at the top of the show, I really wanted to try to do it the way that he does. It just didn't work out. I'm not Eugene Levy. So while I'm usually not one to make assumptions about why people wear tuxedos to the beach, I'm from Florida. But we don't wear tuxedos ever. Now, anyway, Alan gets on a boat with some guy who eventually ditches him because this might as well just happen to him. Talk about the unluckiest dude in Cape Cod right now. Man, you gotta feel for him. A guy who can't swim, all alone, on a little crap boat, he's just been dumped by his girlfriend, and he's trying his best to get the dang thing to start again. Only for the boat to flip out, quite literally flip out, and dump him. So, I guess Victoria wasn't the only person who dumped him. So this actually reminds me of the time that I tried to do paddleboarding at the place my friend worked at the time. And I made the huge mistake of trying to do this with my glasses on. You know, I've never done this before, so I have questions. I ask her, hey, should I put my glasses away before I get on the board? And she says, nah, I think it'll be fine. She had quite a bit of faith in me. And so I stand up on the board. Hang on. Sorry. I stand up on the board and immediately fall and lose my glasses to the river. So I went like 24 hours unable to see anything because my glasses were rotting somewhere at the bottom of the Indian River due to my own stupidity. They probably didn't rot away. They're probably still sitting there, you know. Things don't necessarily, they're not gone forever. I basically littered, not by choice. Thankfully, I can swim quite well. So I was safe and all, but, you know, vision impairment. Anyway, basically what I'm saying is Alan cannot catch a break. That boat takes off without him. With nothing. Nobody in it. It just goes. And he's like, this may as well just happen to me. And on top of it all, he loses his wallet. His wallet. I lost my glasses. And those are easily replaceable. I had them replaced like the next day. Shouts to Lens Crafters. But he loses his whole wallet. With his driver's license, and his credit cards, everything. It's all gone. Lost to the sea. And so he's just floating there. No wallet. When somebody saves him. Who could that be? Perhaps it's this pretty blonde lady he's trying to speak to when he winds up back on the beach. She's a very pretty, very naked blonde lady, and he's trying to speak to her on the beach. The one with the very furry butt. Like I said, Disney Plus cut of Splash. I didn't feel like putting in the DVD, so I'm just watching the Disney Plus cut. At some point, I would like to compare and contrast the original cut versus the Disney Plus cut. I haven't seen it enough times to really make those discernments, but I know that this was very different. Again, Boob Mug was totally fine, but we had to draw a line at furry butt. So, she disappears into the sea, he walks off again, a walletless man, and totally misses the part where a big old orange fishtail splashes out instantly from the water. Hey, there it is, it's the movie title. Now, before I continue, I want to talk about Madison's tail for a minute. The tail Daryl Hannah wore in Splash is designed and created by Robert Short, also known for his work on Star Trek, the motion picture, not the one that came out in 2009, obviously, E.T., and Beetlejuice. I don't remember what the material was, but from what I was reading, it wasn't quite silicone, but it's a gorgeous piece of work, and it's, like, definitive movie tail for me. Also, we have to have this discussion. Orange is a mermaid color. Any color can be a mermaid color. But don't try to tell me that mermaid colors are only the cool colors on the spectrum. You know, the greens, the blues, and the purples. Not when you have tons of mermaid movies with girls with orange tails. And natural hair colors at that. Destroy the idea that mermaids need only have pastel or neon-colored hair. When you don't have a real-life reference for something, it can look however you want to. No rules. That's my philosophy. Boom. Mic drop. No, I'm holding my mic. Don't worry. I'm not going to drop this thing. It costs way too much money. So, anyway, Madison, that's what we're going to call her because we already know who this is. With his totally not a visa, it's like, oh, I forget what it was. It had like a weird like knockoff name just so they wouldn't have to pay royalties to Visa or something. This is kind of her equivalent to the Eric statue in The Little Mermaid, I think. There's this little musical motif in the scene, like, I swear, it sounds a little bit like Part of Your World. I wouldn't be surprised if Alan Menken watched this before he started working on the score for Little Mermaid. And Madison uses this information in his wallet to track him down. Makes note of New York on a map because she's got a whole map in this shipwreck. She's so resourceful. You gotta give her that. And so then she sets off on epic wallet adventure. Kind of like when you find a lost item in Animal Crossing and then it's like, oh great, who does this belong to? Except she knows exactly who it belongs to. You don't have to, like, go around and ask everybody on your island, like, hey, is this yours?
I don't know, but I think I saw Meringue holding this.
Anyway, Madison turns up in New York Harbor and tries to assimilate into a tour group, and by the way, that tour guide is screenwriter Lowell Ganz. Madison is completely nude and is promptly accosted by Statue of Liberty tourists, hashtag free the nipple. She's given a crappy New York tourist shirt, the uniform of New Yorkers who are otherwise short of clothing, see Spider-Man Homecoming after Peter Parker has his Spidey suit taken away. Alan is alerted that someone has his wallet and that person is looking for him, and he makes a run for it. Some rather impressive parkour here as he leaps over his own car, by the way. Gotta give him that. He arrives at the police station to meet the blonde lady who saved him on the beach in a crappy New York tourist shirt. They greet each other with a kiss. Maybe that's just a thing mermaids do in this universe. Or she doesn't understand the concept of personal space. Social distancing, Madison, social distancing. Alan returns to work unusually chipper, singing Zippity-Doo-Dah, perhaps the only trace of this song on Disney Plus without Song of the South in the mix, because he just had sex, and it felt so good. More audio I can't use because NBC would chop me up and fry me up in tempura, like the Disney of major networks they are. Anyway, Madison busts out of the apartment because she's a free fish, baby, and absolutely rocks the lady suit. Well, she's actually wearing one of Alan's suits, even though the woman at Bloomingdale seems to disagree. But this was 1984, and Madison was ahead of her time. Just FYI, there's a quick jab about anorexia in here that's rather tasteless. Again, it was 1984. It was definitely a product of its time, for better or worse. I'm just putting that out there in case you won't like, just in case you were wondering, or just for your, you know, just so you know. So then she finds the TVs and is just hypnotized by them. This, as I was back in the days when I could just stand in front of the TVs at Sears and watch The Simpsons, which I did absolutely 100% do. This is where Alan finds Madison again, and somehow she's learned to speak near perfect English from standing in front of televisions for 6 hours, and that's not quite adding up, but guess what I always say? You can't apply logic to mermaid movies. There it is. Now, while they're on this little trek throughout NYC back to Alan's apartment, he needs a name to refer to her by that's not a series of squeaks and screeches, which is supposedly what her real name is. She decides on Madison as they pass by Madison Avenue. Fun fact, the name Madison skyrocketed in popularity after this movie. Before then, it wasn't really used as a first name, as Alan says, but it sticks. Even now, Madison is a super popular name among girls. A new one in high school. Mermaid set in trends, y'all. So, back at the apartment, Madison takes advantage of the fact that Alan is fast asleep to take a little soak in the bath. A good old saltwater soak, as one does. Okay. Saltwater is actually, in fact, very drying to human skin, from what I understand, but mermaids pretty much require it. At least the ones based in saltwater. I gotta know how this effect was achieved, making it look like the scales were developing on her leg, because that is just such a cool effect. And this right here, this is like the iconic scene from this movie. Even though not much happens, it's Madison taking a good old bath, and her fins are just like unfolding in the tub, and it just looks like art. It looks like art, my friends. And Alan is waking up, hearing the water running, is like, wait, what's that sound? Who's in the bath? Wait, who else is home? Where's Madison? And so he immediately gets up to see who's making the water run. Caveat, Madison is in the tub, fins out, and ooh, once Alan finds out about this, it's gonna get weird. So, the girl rushes to dry off. Again, I mentioned this in a past episode, and I think it was the 13th year, but this, I think, was the beginning of the mermaid when wet trope. More on that later. Point is, she dries off in the nick of time, and life goes on. Hey, at least you remember to lock the door. But geez, Alan is shouting like he thinks Madison is drowning or something. But Madison's excuse is that she was shy. She was shy. She was shy! After she was fully nude in front of the Statue of Liberty and massive amounts of PDA, she was shy. But I guess Alan's just gonna go with that. Okay. Now we return to the adventures of Dr. Walter Kornbluth, fresh off spotting a mermaid, and I think his life has ultimately changed. But wouldn't yours? Literally every scene with Eugene Levy, such as this one, is comedy gold. I'm mostly marking this one because, one, he's got a lead on his mermaid, and one of his crew members is reading a story about a naked woman at the Statue of Liberty, and two, because for some reason I laughed out loud about him griping over another crew member effectively sitting on his air hose. Something about the delivery here is just priceless. Like I said, he is a master. If anyone else tried to do Kornbluth, they wouldn't sell it the way Eugene Levy does. I'm just going to go ahead and put that out there. He really is just the master of his craft. Back at the apartment, fashion icon Madison, in a basic pink tee and statement necklace, learns about gifting. I guess gifting isn't a thing where she's from, which is interesting. Alan gifts her with a box. Oh, she loves this box. It's that kind of Tiffany teal, all wrapped up in a bow, and oh, she was supposed to open it. Okay. So she opens it, and it's a music box. Still a box. Different kind of box. Okay, fun Xandria fact, I'm obsessed with music boxes. If there's anything I collect more than shells, it's music boxes. Speaking of obsessions, somewhere along the line, I forgot how to read. Alan reveals his fascination with a particular fountain on another evening stroll with Madison. This is where Alan recounts his accident 20 years ago from the beginning of the movie, and he briefly mentions that this little park that they're in is about to be torn down to build some riverside condos, but more on that later. So somewhere there's this tennis scene, and this is a really, really good one. I actually love all the scenes with Alan and Freddie just because I really like their sibling relationship, and I love their dynamic, and I love the way that Tom Hanks and John Candy play off of each other. Tom plays this like kind of straight man, everyman kind of guy, and Freddie is the obnoxious older brother who kind of gets in the way a little bit, but I think he's coming from a place of love, and you really, really see that in this movie. This scene is great, because this is where Alan and Freddie have a pretty meaningful heart-to-heart about how Alan really feels about Madison. And I think this right here is one of the scenes where Freddie's true heart shows itself. And Freddie's a good guy when it counts. He basically says to Alan, hey, you're not in love with, you say you're not in love with this girl, but everything she does drives you crazy. And I'm like, you know what? You're right. Tell him, Freddie, admit you're in love. If this movie were made like a decade and a half later, he'd be strolling through a garden in ancient Greece singing about how he won't say he's in love while five concrete John Candies tell him just to admit it. So, anyway, remember that fountain I was talking about? Yeah, you do. I know you do. Because I told you to make note of it, and you did. And so you passed the test. Congratulations. So remember when Madison learned about gifting? Yeah. Yeah, you do. About that. Madison gave him the fountain. Uh-huh. That whole fountain. Whole big old fountain. Yeah. It's in his apartment now. That's a lot. And she traded her necklace for the fountain. That's how she paid for it. A lot to unpack there. But real quick. Actually, I don't know how quick this is going to be because this is probably going to be like a huge tangent now I mention it. I want to give special notice to this fountain for a minute. So back in the day when Disney's Hollywood Studios was Disney MGM Studios, this is in Florida, FYI. This is the Florida Park, Walt Disney World in Florida, in Orlando. Sorry, Lake Buena Vista. I know there's a difference. I don't care. It's Orlando. In the backlot area of the park was a replica of the fountain. I think it was a replica. I was never really clear on it. But it was the fountain that Madison gave Alan in this scene. And in front of the fountain, there's this plaque with a pretty informative blurb, basically about the construction of the fountain. Fun fact, the fountain was made entirely out of fiberglass. Yeah, whole thing. Of course, like I said, Splash is very special to Disney, being the flagship Touchstone production. And like I said, the sequel was filmed on studio grounds at Disney MGM Studios. So this fountain replica was seated right outside the studio catering restaurant, right by the Honey, I Shrunk the Kids playground, and not far off from the now-defunct studio backlot tour. Actually, all these things are now defunct because they tore this place down to make room for some Riverside condos. And by Riverside condos, I mean Toy Story Land. Studio catering closed in April of 2016, and I'm pretty sure the fountain was gone with it. I can't be sure where it is now. Perhaps some mermaid bought it for her sweetheart with her necklace. No, it was not me. I don't have a sweetheart, and I'm also broke. Anyway, I actually managed to get a picture of this fountain in early 2016 before it was taken out, along with the blurb in front, and I'll be putting that on Twitter, as well as the new Mermaid Movie Club blog. More on that later. Look, I just miss her, okay? I just miss the fountain. It was my favorite thing in the park. And now it's probably Voyage of the Little Mermaid. Either that or Galaxy's Edge. I said Toy Story Land was in place of the old backlot. And I'm not 100% on that, but I'm pretty sure it is because I'm just remembering, like, its proximity to Voyage. Because I know, like, you walk past Voyage and you go all that way. And the last time I was at Hollywood was probably a year ago. So I don't remember off the top of my head. But I just remember walking by Mermaid before you get to Toy Story Land. And it was the same deal with the fountain. So I think that's kind of whereabouts. And before we move on, I want to say there are behind-the-scenes photos from either Splash or Splash 2 on display at the Backlot Express restaurant, which is right by Star Tours in Hollywood Studios, or somewhere else in the park. Unless I'm just thinking of studio catering again. If it was studio catering, they're probably gone. But if you know the definitive answer to this conundrum, please let me know. Show notes, socials, blah, blah, blah. And then also, if you go to the Chinese Theater, there's a handprint of Daryl Hannah's hands, and she has like the little shape of Madison's fin drawn around it, which I thought was really neat. That was from like February of 89, just months before the park opened. And one more thing, I promise after this we're gonna move on. I promise you. I don't think this is in any of the parks, but I think last I checked, Madison's tail was being held at Planet Hollywood in what used to be Downtown Disney. Now it's called Disney Springs. But I wanna say it's been moved because they reopened the restaurant as the Planet Hollywood Observatory in 2017. And I want to say they moved it because I can't find any recent pictures of it. But if you have the answer to this, you know how to get a hold of me. Get on my socials. Please tell me. I need to know the answer to this because I still am apprehensive about going back to Disney World right now. But that's another story for another day. So thank you for that commercial break, Xandria. And now back to our show. Anyway, let's check back in with Dr. Walter Kornbluth again, shall we? How's he doing? Well, his mentor basically mermaid-shamed him, dismissed him as a loony for claiming he saw one. However, this mentor inadvertently gives him his idea for exposing his mermaid, so he chases after Madison and Alan because somehow he knows how to find them. I don't even think he knows Alan's name. So it becomes a question of, how does he know where to find them so he can follow them with two buckets full of water? Was this explained somewhere where I can't remember? So weird. Alan in 2020 could post a selfie with Madison in Central Park, tag his location, and all Walter has to do is trade places with one of those horse carriage drivers and wait until they get on so he can throw buckets on her. But then they have to wonder why a carriage driver would have buckets of water on his carriage. Well, horses got a drink, right? Anyway, I don't know. It blows my mind. No, you can't apply logic to mermaids, but Walter is not a mermaid. So how is he doing this? Does anybody have any insight on this? Please, please. I need answers for this because this is just kind of like wild to me. So then Alan and Madison have a change of clothes. They go to a nice dinner. And I have to point this out real quick because this is also an interesting bit. Madison ordered lobster. She ordered lobster. She eats this lobster straight up. She doesn't break it apart or anything. She just digs right in, goes like whole hog into this lobster. And this is interesting for a few reasons. The first thing I thought of is that it kind of eschews a common mermaid idea that mermaids don't eat fish or crustaceans and or are inherently vegan or vegetarian. That's something that kind of changes from film to film as mermaids are interpreted differently throughout most films. That's kind of the whole idea of why I do this podcast, you know, to compare and contrast all of those. You know who is vegetarian, though? Daryl Hannah. In fact, that lobster is stuffed with not lobster meat, but with mashed potatoes and hearts of palm because Daryl wouldn't eat a real lobster. I want to say that the outer shell is an actual lobster, so I don't think she liked that very much, but the filling was not lobster. So that, my mer friends, is movie magic. This is not my way of dissing vegans or vegetarians. I am just stating something here, so I'm just going to go ahead and put that out there. Thank you for understanding. Y'all are cool. After dinner, Alan and Madison go ice skating, and this is where Alan makes his big proposal to Madison. Get that. Allison wanted to marry Madison after 3 days. 3 days. Madison declines. How dare she? Who does she think she is passing up Tom Hanks? Well, she has her reasons. Nothing she can really explain right now, of course, so she has to keep Alan in the dark. You begin to wonder if she ever really planned on telling Alan. Just me? Fine? Okay. But, oh, if this boy ain't bitter. He's starting to see the holes in Madison's story, but she just takes off. Just in time for it to rain. Don't worry, Madison's safe and dry. And this is actually one of my favorite parts of the musical score. There's this like palpable tension between Alan and Madison while they're separated. And oh, it's so gorgeous. Where was the Grammy for Lee Holdridge? Come on, y'all. Fun fact before I move on, the guy grabbing Alan by the feet while he's trying to get the skates off, that is Babalu Mandel, one of the screenwriters. The more you know. Fortunately, Madison comes around and everything seems hunky-dory again. And Alan is on cloud nine. I love this whole monologue as they're entering the elevator, like, oh, you're going to love being married to me. I was born to be married. I come from a long line of married people. I hate him so much. No, I don't. He's a mess, and I love him so much. But that is one of my favorite bits in this movie because it's really not funny. But he's, like, so giddy. He's just, like, talking a mile a minute and saying everything that comes to mind. Kind of like the word vomit in Mean Girls. He's so giddy that he suggests taking Madison to Maryland to get married, where they don't need blood tests. And as someone who's never been married before, I did not know you had to have blood tests to get a marriage license. I researched this a little bit, and turns out this isn't really a thing anymore. In fact, I think Montana finally scrapped it last year. So, the more you know. So then they go to have dinner with the president, because sure, I guess that's what you do. Walter is back at it again, and every time we see him now, he has some kind of battle scar. First it was the broken arm. Now it's his busted glasses. You gotta love the consistency. But he is now alarmingly close to Alan and Madison, so maybe he's gonna have his moment. He is armed and dangerous. I mean, he's armed with glorified water pumps, but armed nonetheless. But this dude does not think things through. Not only is he armed and dangerous, but he is at a dinner with a massive water pump strapped to his back, like he's in Super Mario Sunshine, at dinner with the President of the United States. I think at this time of year it would have been Ronald Reagan, but this guy's definitely not Reagan. It's one of those things. One of the most protected people in the world, the President of the United States. You think he'd be a bit smarter about this, being a scientist and using logic and reason and all. But this is Walter. A massive piece of equipment on his back with hoses that look like guns. To dinner with the president. I mean, I don't know how he felt about the guy, and I know he wasn't after him, but you're kind of doing yourself a disservice here. Foresight, Walter. Foresight! So naturally, Walter is escorted out of the building, and this is all going very quickly now. This whole scene starts to get really, really stressful, and it's kind of hard for me to watch. In the middle of the president's speech, Madison tells Alan that she wants to tell him her secret, but they have to leave the room so she can tell him in private. And they leave, but Walter isn't quite out of their hair, still being held back by a sea of people from the media, from security, what have you. And in this moment, Madison regretted not telling Alan earlier, because the moment he locked eyes with Madison, Walter put that Super Mario Sunshine water pump to work, and the next thing you know, everything comes to a screeching halt. There's silence. There is chaos. It's quiet chaos. And a mermaid on the sidewalk. Dramatic pause. What happens next, like I said, it's incredibly stressful to watch. As Madison is surrounded by the media, there's flashbulbs going off, people like getting really up close with her, asking her questions. She's being taken away on a limo, and just a lot of things happening at once. And the world is just whizzing past Alan in a minute. And he's just frozen in time. Cut to non-specific laboratory. Yep, it's one of those mermaid scenarios. Alan is standing in a tank, hooked up to some kind of machine, completely naked. And I do mean completely. Alan, who has to point out in that trademark Hanks shout, "I am not a fish!" I don't know how loud that was. Sorry. This is one of the shots that really sticks out to me when I watch this movie or when I think of this movie. And I think it's one of the most played for laughs shots in the entire movie. And God, we needed a laugh after the stress of the last scene. Like, watching that scene again. And I've seen this movie several times, like I said. But I still get so stressed out during that reveal scene because it's just like so many things happening. But I'm kind of a high anxiety person in general. So there's another fun Xandria fact. I just get stressed out. Why do you think I was gone for so long? Alan is released and promptly ambushed by the media, asking pretty typical mermaid questions like, what does she eat? Or how does she make love? Or is she also seeing Burt Reynolds? Yep. Yep. We only love human men. Totally true. No, it's not. Freddy comes in absolutely clutch and gets Alan the shell out of there because that's what a good bro does. Good bro. Questionable morals, but good bro. He gives Alan the pep talk of his life about how people fall in love every day, revealing his own insecurities about romance. And God, why did we have to lose John Candy? This is such a brief performance right here, but it is so powerful. And it speaks volumes, I think, to Freddy's character, to the kind of role that he plays in Alan's life. And I just think the world of it. I think the world of John Candy in this movie. He is so, 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 so good in this. Speaking of characters and showing their true intentions, while Madison is still being studied, Walter, Dr. Walter Kornbluth, is starting to have a change of heart. He's dissed by his superior for noting that Madison looks sickly. And, you know, you look at her, gosh, it's kind of like looking at when you look at a fish and you know they're kind of on their last leg fins, while they're on their last fins. Her scales are peeling and pale, and he's close to tears watching her in the tank. This is a far cry from the Walter we met in the beginning. And Madison, you got to think about her too. The love of her life just ditched her because he found out what she really was. She's heartbroken and it's starting to show. And she's also probably in some chemical water that's not healthy for her, so there's that. But you know who else is out of change of heart? Our friend Alan Bauer. He wants to see Madison again, but he's got to go through Walter first, because between the two of them, Walter is the only one with clearance to get into that lab. Oh, and they're bringing Freddy too. So the cavalry is effectively here. Walter passes them off as Swedish doctors, and by that, all they can say is, yeah, 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 yeah. But at least Freddy knows how to say he has a 10-inch penis in Swedish. I'm not asking, and neither should you. They reunite with Madison, and you can actually hear her heart rate increase when she sees him. I wanted to point that out because I really like that detail. She's like hooked up to all these things. And so you can hear like her heart rate go up. So that was a really cool thing that they included. And here's where the Great Mermaid Heist is underway. As they wrapped up Madison into a car and head straight on till morning, leaving Freddy behind as a diversion. But now the scientists are on a hunt for, quote unquote, their mermaid. And now I'm getting really bad flashbacks to Scales. Remember Mermaid Movie Club number 3? When they realized that Siren had made a break for the sea. Like I said, go back to Mermaid Movie Club number 3 and Scales, mermaids are real. That was fun. The Great Mermaid Heist continues as they send literal military vehicles to chase after Alan's car. So much happens in this chase scene. Walter sacrifices himself for the greater good. And by that mean, I mean he doesn't die. I could never bear the thought of losing Walter Kornbluth at this point. I want to protect him now. He just inadvertently rolls into a hole and exclaims, "What a week I'm having!" Like I said, everything Eugene Levy does in this movie is gold. Perhaps finding the mermaid was the luckiest thing he did all week. Which, by the way, going back to that Scales episode again, I mentioned briefly the Japanese mermaid myth of the Ningyo and how they were typically unlucky. So maybe there's a little bit of that here as well. You never know. The military dudes have to knock over a taxi that's blocking their path, and there's a helicopter somewhere. And then they finally make it, Alan and Madison, they finally make it to the sea in the nick of time. And this is where Madison decides to drop the clamshell that she was Alan's savior all those years ago. Mermaids must have like elephant memory. I sure don't. Some mermaids, I guess. She finally takes off into the sea, and then after much pondering, he does too. They kiss, and I guess that allows him to breathe underwater or something. She says something about him being safe when he's underwater with her, but that's very open to interpretation. I don't know what she meant by that. After fighting off some military divers, you know, casual mermaid stuff, they live happily ever after, under the sea, together. One thing I like about this ending, real quick, is that Madison, as she's telling Alan he can be safe with her, she also tells him he can't go back to the surface. He can't see Freddy. He can't go back to his job. None of that. I would think this was retconned in Splash 2, but again, I haven't seen it. There's no weird reversal like in Scales where the whole time Siren thought she was going to have to be like in the sea for a long time because she thought she was a half-breed, and then suddenly, no, I'm a full breed. I can just come and go as I please. And it's just like, what did she learn from that? It felt like a cop-out to me. Again, Splash 2 might have undone this mechanism, but who knows? Until then, this has been Splash. So, we're going to be doing something completely different from here on out. I realized during my hiatus from the show that I wasn't really effectively tying all these films together like I said I was. And obviously, if you remember from the Scales episode, I did remove our Starfish rating scale. And I switched that out for like a 3 for 3. Here's what I liked, here's what I didn't like. And after a while, I was just kind of looking for things I didn't like, which kind of defeated the purpose of removing the rating system. So what I'm going to be doing from here on out is I'm going to be highlighting different common mermaid tropes that I've found in these films. In this case, it would be Splash, but these are also common to other films or TV shows even, and other related stories. And I haven't quite given a name to this yet. Hopefully I'll have one before the next episode. But if you want a comprehensive list of tropes that I found that will probably be coming up in later episodes, head on over to our new sort of homepage on Tumblr, because I live in 2011. That is mermaidmovieclub.tumblr.com. That is going to be the new hub for show updates and other things of import. mermaidmovieclub.tumblr.com. Mermaid Movie Club is all one word. There's no dashes. Get into it. If it's not a list of actual tropes that I found on tvtropes.com. Listen, I tried to do that, and there's so much to cover, and I just really wanted tropes that were specific to mermaids. So, sue me, I guess. Now, let's just go ahead and continue. Perhaps the biggest one, the first one, is the dry human, wet mermaid trope. This one, I think, was actually started by Splash, if I'm honest. I think the most notable example is, or at least the first notable example, is when Madison's in the bathtub and her fins are unfolding. Then Alan knocks on the door and she's like scrambling to dry off before he can get the door open. And her keeping that secret kind of goes hand in hand with that. That's a whole other thing in itself. I think I listed that on there on the list. But again, that goes hand in hand with this one. The other iconic moment, or notable example, I should say, being when Walter is hosing her down and revealing her tale to the world in that really stressful scene where they're getting out of dinner. I think I mentioned something like this in the 13th Year episode, where I think there might be certain stories that have this little characteristic before Splash, but perhaps the lore of the Selkie comes closest to this, where they're human on land and seals in the sea. But as far as actual media is concerned, I think this is the first instance in which we see this. Aquamarine played around with this a little bit with an additional stipulation, so it got a little bit interesting, where Aqua still had to be a mermaid at night, regardless of whatever contact with water she had or didn't have. Almost like a werewolf mermaid situation. Weremaid? Weremer? You'd be surprised how common what werewolves and mermaids have in common. There's moon stuff involved. This later became a key characteristic of H2O Just Add Water. I'm sure if you're listening to this show, you're probably familiar with it. If you're not, it's the Australian mermaid drama. And this is where, like, the main characters, if one teeny itty bitty drop of water hits them, fins. It's just fins. It's Fin City. Fin City! Whee! I don't know if you guys remember that from The Little Mermaid 2. I'm just really excited to cover that one eventually. Uh-huh. In all honesty, this probably just makes filming easier because then you don't have to be underwater all the time. And there's, like, little dodgy special effects to use. But in recent years, special effects have become a little bit more streamlined, such as in Aquaman in 2018, that relied heavily on VFX not only to create an underwater setting, but also providing, like, the floating hair effects, such as hair, and as well as Mara's bioluminescent gown, in addition to floating red hair, among other things. Perhaps that could be used in future mermaid-centric films, such as the upcoming live-action remake of The Little Mermaid, which I think that's actually going to be the case. I think that's what I heard, is that it's going to be a mix of, like, live-action tale, real tale, and VFX tale. That's what I last saw. Don't quote me. And so it's going to be a mix of that and, I guess, some underwater footage in there, but it's too early to tell. You know, this is August. Right now it's August when I'm recording, and I don't know if they've started filming yet. I'm under the impression, I don't even know if they've gone back to London yet. Because last I checked, they were getting ready to go back to London. I don't know. I'm not one of those, like, Disney insider people. They do that way better than I do. I'm just a mermaid on the internet, you guys. So let's just go ahead and move on to the next point. The second one I found was a mermaid falling in love with a human. This is all too common in mermaid lore, thanks to a couple notable stories. But there's one in particular I want to point out. It goes, mermaids being a romantic figure, this goes all the way back to the very, 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 very first mermaid, which is the Syrian goddess Atargatis. And if I'm getting that name wrong, please let me know. I have a voice message box. You can correct me. I am happy to be corrected where it's needed. But don't be a jerk when you correct me. So Atargatis, she's said to be the very first mermaid. Atargatis fell in love with a mortal and had a daughter with him. But at some point, she accidentally killed him. And she threw herself into a river in an act of shame. As a result, she is transformed into a figure that is half human and half fish in appearance. Some say she was kind of a precursor to Aphrodite in Greek mythology and Venus in Roman mythology, both goddesses of love. So mermaids and romance are, by that logic, inherently tied. In this case, it's Madison pining after Alan. What makes it different from, say, Ariel and Eric, for example, is that Madison had met Alan so many years ago. There's a lot of time that transpires over the course of this movie from beginning to end. Remember, we first meet Madison and Alan when they are kids, and Madison saves him. There's 20 years between that and, well, the meat of the movie. Madison doesn't just run after him right then and there, not when she first meets him. Madison waits a few years, 20 years, when she runs into him again and actually has something to go on. Compare that to the next example from Aquamarine, where Aquamarine is reluctant to go back to the sea, because she's head over fins for this guy she just met, that being Raymond, and she won't go back until Haley and Claire help set her up with him. That, I think, goes for both the novel and the movie. It's funny. You never see a mermaid falling in love with another mer person. It's always human. Which leads us right into number 3. Mermaid becoming human to be with a human guy. In the case of Madison, she did not have to make a deal with a sea witch to trade her tail for legs. That seems to be a thing with merfolk in this universe, as with Aquamarine and H2O, like I said, where they can just have legs when they're dry. Easy stuff. But she takes advantage of this little ability to reunite herself with the man she rescued when the two of them were just kids. And how she remembers that, again, that's just kind of to me. Reuniting with a man she rescued from drowning. That sounds familiar too. In the case of Madison, it doesn't seem to be a, I just want to be human thing. She doesn't share that with Ariel, even though she effectively predates Ariel by about 5 years. Instead, she keeps Alan for herself to be with her under the sea. But she has to become human to get him first. That's being proactive. She has to go to him, because they're clearly not going to stick around long enough to find her. He's not going to stick around long enough to find her. Again, you gotta love a proactive mermaid. I mean, that goes for Madison, that goes for Ariel. You see it, you like it, you want it, you get it. Never give up on your dreams. Number 4. And this is like one of my least favorite tropes. I talked about this in the Scales episode. Again, I hate this one so much. Mermaid getting captured and studied for science. But I liked it in this movie because a lot of it was played for laughs. Such as Alan standing naked in a tank covering his junk after a few seconds yelling, "I am not a fish!" And then, of course, where Freddie and Alan try to get in by pretending to be Swedish scientists. This also goes hand in hand with keeping the mer stuff secret, because if you get found, you get captured or even killed. That was mentioned in The Mermaid, that's Mermaid Movie Club number 4, where the Elder Mermaid talks about less than stellar human-mermaid relations and why mers need to stay hidden. Same thing early on with Siren, where Donna is being studied. Same thing in Scales, Mermaids Are Real, where Siren was basically pursued by hunters who decided that her blood would heal some kid's illness because science. That movie was interesting. Fun, though. Sure, it was fun. Number 5. And this one's also interesting, interestingly common. Full Moon Stuff. I forget how to talk sometimes. I'm sorry, you guys. I'm not sure what exactly the full moon mechanics are in this movie, but Madison mentions that she's in New York for 6 fun-filled days when the moon is full. There's some science to mermaids and full moons. No, they're not quite like werewolves, even though I just said that a minute ago. Or maybe they are in some universes. It's up for debate. But as we all know, the moon has a great effect on ocean tides, which would be the science. Which I would assume that, like, if they affect ocean tides so much, they've got to have some sort of effect on mermaids. I go back to H2O. That's a big part of H2O where, like, if those girls even kind of look at a full moon, things just kind of go bonkers from there. Like, that kind of amplifies their powers. It also kind of, like, alters their mental state, it looks like, which is kind of wild. I'm just remembering that one episode where, like, Ricky sets an entire forest on fire while, what's his name? The blonde kid. I know his name, and I forgot it immediately, and I'm going to remember it as soon as I finish recording. You know who I'm talking about, though, the blonde kid. They're both on the island, and she sets it on fire. And, oh, this is, like, the one time I can't remember his name. I always remember his name. But now, please don't message me about this, because I'm going to look it up as soon as I get off the mic here. I hate this. So yeah, there was that. And then Aquamarine, like I said, with the moon stuff. Well, there wasn't so much moon stuff. I think that was more night stuff. I have to go back to Aquamarine again. Should I redo Aquamarine now that I've made so many edits to the show since then? I don't know. Maybe. But either way, there's some moon stuff with mermaids and tides and stuff, and I'm not a scientist. I'm gonna just come out and say this. I don't know anything about science. I'm bad at it. Maybe I should start wrapping this up. This is already getting a little bit awkward. So to wrap up my thoughts, Splash is without a doubt a classic, not just among mermaid films, but among films in general. It's a story of love without judgment, the truest love, where you can be your truest self with the person you love. Maybe your truest self has fins. Doesn't matter. Splash, at its core, reminds us that we are all capable of being loved, scales and all, despite what we might think of ourselves. And that, to me, is the beauty of it. So that's our show. Thanks so much for being so patient with me as I worked on rolling this one out and getting back on my fins and getting back in the swim of things. As I said before, I was planning on taking a mental health break from the show. I was hoping to have this one ready in June. You know, lots of stuff happened, obviously. But we're back. For realsies. I'm so happy because now I'm doing something that isn't playing Animal Crossing again. And this break has been really, really good for me because it's kind of helped me reframe what I'm doing here, how to stay true to my intent. And it's also, spoiler alert, it's helped me figure out how to be consistent with it. So, look forward, hopefully, to actual consistent episodes from here on out. Look forward to that. And I just unplugged my headphones. That was what you heard just now. So the break was really the best thing I could do. If you need to take a break from whatever you're doing, like whatever content you're making, whatever project you're working on, it might be good for you. I'm just putting that out there because it was very good for me. I'm really just glad I took that time off because it just gave me a moment to kind of look at it from the outside and kind of reassess and go from there. But thank you again so much for the patience that you showed me, the love that you showed me during that time. I really, really, really felt it. I appreciate it so much. And it really keeps me going. So again, thank you guys. I love y'all so much. And I'm going to go ahead and let Post Episodes Andrea take us out. Post Episodes Andrea, it's all you. Thanks for tuning in to the Mermaid Movie Club for this discussion of Splash. Please be sure to stay tuned to all my socials to find out what our next selection will be. I'm Mermaids Andrea, all one word, on Twitter and Instagram. Be sure to message me with all your thoughts, and you can even leave a voice message if you're using the Anchor app. Be sure to subscribe on the streaming app of your choice and tell all your mer friends about the show. And be sure to leave a rate and review on Apple Podcasts. In the meantime, this has been Mermaids Andrea. Have an amazing day and a fantastic tomorrow.